Welcome back to another episode of Talkin' Moto. Today we have the one and only Unadilla recap, which, not trying to pat myself on the back here, but I did go 2 for 2 in my predictions for, I think, maybe like the second or third time ever. See, I'm very excited and proud of myself for doing that. Honestly, I thought it was just obvious choices. I guess we're getting into a little bit of spoilers here, but we'll get into that when we get into it. We were coming into Unadilla with a chance at 2 championship celebrations. We had Hayden Deegan coming in with a 51-point lead over Joe Shimoda in the 250 class. All he needed was 50-point lead at the end of the day at Unadilla. And Jet Lawrence came in with a, I think it was 47-point lead. So he needed to get at least 3 points from his brother, Hunter Lawrence, for him to clinch the championship. And I had a pretty strong feeling that Jet was going to come out angry. And I just had a feeling the old Joe show, name Wasabi Joe, is getting thrown out there a lot right now. Getting a little spicy, especially in the beginning parts of the race. I just had a feeling he was going to come out not wanting that champagne pop just yet for old danger boy Hayden Deegan. Let's get into 250 qualifying now. We had a surpriser at the top of the board, Drew Adams. He was actually our fastest qualifier, his first ever fastest qualifier here in his pro career. He qualified with a 214.282, and just like how you normally see it on the track, if you see one Pro Circuit Monster Energy Kawasaki, there's most likely going to be at least one or maybe even two right behind him. And that was the case in qualifying. Seth Hamaker, Drew Adams' teammate, qualified second, 214.767. So this just really showed the raw speed that the young Drew Adams had at Unadilla. He was almost half a second faster than his teammate who was in second place. And Julian Beaumaire, he has surprised me a lot the last couple rounds. Starting at Ironman, he was getting some better starts, a little bit better moto finishes. Turns out, Jason Wygant said this, going into Ironman, it was his first race with contacts. I guess he didn't know he needed contacts or glasses. I guess he just had bad vision and wasn't seeing very good and thought, this can't just be solely based on riding. So I guess he went to the eye doctor, got some contacts, and there is no surprise that he's kind of been able to turn his motocross season around a little bit. Yeah, he did struggle. Ironman, he got a 14, but here at Unadilla, he did a whole lot better. I do believe it was a season, no, one position short of a season best for Julian Beaumaire. But still, came out firing good, qualified third with a 215.069. And then in fifth place, we get Hayden Deegan. Like I mentioned, he just basically needed to maintain, match Joe Shimoda. All he could do was lose 1 point to Shimoda, and he would wrap up the championship one round early. Came out, qualified fifth with a 215.825, a second and a half behind the young Drew Adams. Although I guess when you're talking about Hayden Deegan and Drew Adams, they're both young. But the younger Drew Adams, I should say, how old is Drew Adams? Born in 2008. Jeez, oh Pete. But the first time I've actually really felt old doing one of these. And I was born in 2000. Holy smokes. Anyway, we're gonna ignore that part. We had Hayden Deegan qualifying fifth. And then his title rival, Joe Shimoda, qualified eighth. Shimoda, it seems like qualifying speed is never really there, but it does seem like every race, no matter what, he he goes his own pace, does his own speed, I guess, if you will. And most of the time, it's been able to work out for him. So he qualified 8th here with a 216.327. That is 2 seconds behind Drew Adams. And not really ideal for him going into this high-pressure race. Although you got to think there was more pressure on Hayden Deegan than there was on Joe Shimoda. But still, a little bit of pressure on Shimoda to try and push this championship to the final round at Bud's Creek that is coming up this weekend, which I will not be able to watch live again, so that does kind of suck. But anyway, who else we got here? Ty Masterpool came back to racing, qualified 12th with a 217, his first race since Southwick. To be honest, Ty Masterpool, a little bit of a disappointment this year, especially what he was able to do the last couple years, fighting for race wins and even moto wins at times. A little bit disappointing. Obviously, he did have that injury there in the middle that kept him out for a little bit. But anyway, we had one guy making his pro debut in Caden Dunley for the Star Racing Yamaha Monster Energy team. Can never remember exactly which way those words go, but he did make his debut as the rain really starts to fall right now. Hopefully that's not too bad. Caden Dunley qualified 15th, just over 3.5 seconds out, and the long-awaited return of Cole Davies, who did struggle. Well, I don't know why I said that. He did not struggle whatsoever in Supercross, it seemed like. Just had the unfortunate injury getting landed on by Jordan Smith at the end of Supercross. He also made his debut in motocross this last weekend, qualified 17th. And he was a little bit better coming out of the gates in Supercross than he was here in motocross. And I think that just about wraps us up for qualifying. So I'm going to check the audio real quick to see if... Never mind. I don't think I need to check it because it seemed like the rain has now calmed down a whole lot. So we're just going to keep on rolling here to 250 Moto number 1, where Tom Vial went out, grabbed the hole shot. He's been starting to look like his, a little bit more of his normal self here this last couple rounds. But it just really sucks that he will be gone at the end of this season. More of that at the end of this 250 recap. We will get into that a little bit more. But Tom Vial goes out there, grabs the hole shot. It had Hayden Deegan in fourth and Joe Shimoda down in eighth. But old Shimoda was able to make a lot of passes on lap one. He was probably the most aggressive I have ever seen him on lap one, or just early laps of a moto, knowing that he needs to go out there, he needs to perform, he needs to beat Hayden Deegan. And really just kind of hope for a little bit of luck on Deegan not finishing solid. If he still wants a realistic shot at the championship, he needed a little bit of luck. It's just unfortunate for Joe Shimoda. In the end, he didn't exactly get that luck. But anyway, Joe Shimoda was very aggressive. Deegan passes on Hayden Deegan, Julian Bomer, and Seth Hamaker to get himself all the way up to second place. And then he was behind Tom Vial for a little bit. He was able to make the move on Vial. I'm not exactly sure why I didn't have this pulled up already, if I could get it pulled up. So I'm just going to talk about how impressive Joe Shimoda's quick passes were in the beginning of the race. like I said, he, I don't think I've ever seen him move as quickly and swift and quick. He was very, very, very smart. I think that's probably the best way to describe it. Now, taking a little look at the replay of the pass on Tom Vial. Vial went to the far outside. Shimoda just went to the middle, and it kind of looked like Vial either got a little scared exiting the corner or just straight up surprised that Joe Shimoda was there, because coming out of the corner, Vial's bike gets a little, starts dancing a little bit coming out of that rut, and Shimoda was able to make the pass on Vial. And at that point, I mentioned how aggressive he was on the first couple laps. He kept that aggression the entire race, even after he got out to the lead. He just straight up put the absolute hammer down. 10 minutes in, he already had an 11-second gap over Deegan, who made his way up, getting past, what is it, Seth Hammaker here. Just, I think, once again, just caught Hammaker by surprise to get himself into second place. Seth, going into this right-hand turn, looked like he maybe wanted to go to the inside rut, maybe missed it, carrying a little bit. No, I don't think he missed it. I think he missed it. Now watching it again for the third time, I do believe Seth Hammaker maybe missed the rut he was going for. Deegan was able to capitalize it, get to the inside, and get to second place. But he had absolutely nothing on Joe Shimoda. Halfway, Shimoda had a 16.8-second gap. Nothing really happened after this. Shimoda just kept on absolutely dominating. That's what I have for my last note on 250 Moto One. Joe absolutely dominated, and there was no question about it. There was a point where he had, I do believe it was a 41-second gap. Yeah, 41.2-second gap, which was the largest. It would have been the largest winning margin of the season, but he did kind of let up the last lap, and Deegan was able to get a little bit closer to not suffer the largest gap of the season. Chance Hymus has the largest win margin of the season, by the way. But Joe Shimoda, looking at lap times here, just shows his best lap was a 219.155, and the next closest was Hayden Deegan with a 220.507. So Shimoda was just very comfortable on this track, where it seemed like really nobody else was super comfortable here in Moto One. And he just did it consistently. He went out there, I mentioned it in qualifying, he doesn't always stand out in qualifying because sometimes he might not have just that straight up raw speed that, say, a Deegan has, or even Supercross, Cole Davies showed, and Julian Bomer showed, Seth Hammaker has shown it before, but he has his speed, which always somehow seemed, well, I can't say always because he's not undefeated, blah, blah, blah. His speed, more times than not, it seems like, is a top level, top caliber speed for during the moto, and especially at the end of the moto when the track gets rough. It seems like he doesn't really fall off as much as other guys. I know Hayden Deegan is strong at the end of races as well, but it seems like really them two, they don't fall off like other racers tend to do towards the end of the moto, especially like the last 5 to 10 minutes. It seems like they are just as strong as they were in the first 5 to 10 minutes. So we had Moto One here. We had Joe Shimoda, Hayden Deegan second, Seth Hammaker third, And the one other thing here on Moto One was Tom Vial was a very distant fourth place, but it got to the point where he's last lap, he started to close it up on Seth Hammaker. He got it to about a second, second and a half to 2 seconds. And then I think he just made too many mistakes and ended up falling in the comfortable fourth position where he finished in Moto One. But big shout out to Caden Dunley. Goes out first moto, gets a seventh place. And then you look on the flip side for Cole Davies, goes out 23rd. Obviously not the debut race that he wanted. Really just not the debut day that Cole Davies wanted. People were so excited for him. There was a lot of people thinking he'd go top 10, and it just seemed like maybe they swung for something setup-wise coming back to Unadilla. It was a very difficult track, and it seemed like they missed a little bit. But we will get into, I feel like I say this a lot, there's so much stuff that I don't want to get into yet because we still got a whole nother moto. So I got to try and remember that we will get into Cole Davies' pro debut in motocross a little bit later. And also a little bit of a letdown was Drew Adams. Not on screen a whole lot. His fastest lap was a 2:25. So obviously not very close to the pace. And he did finish in 18th. So a little upsetting for your 250 fastest qualifier here in Moto number 1. So now getting into Moto number 2. Where we had Tom Vial again goes out there. I mentioned it a little bit back to his normal self, going out there grabbing hole shots. Also, forgot to mention, really sucks. Mikel Harrop crashed in Moto number 1, ended up breaking his collarbone, so he will be out. And I really, really, really hope that he is able to stay over here in the States, because he accelerated so much more than I think a lot of people were thinking here coming into this motocross season. He was very, very solid all year long. Obviously, until his crash in Moto One, he never looked out of place or uncomfortable. And I know the plan was for him to just be over here for this summer to race, to just continue racing on Triumph, and then he was going to go back and race the 450 over in the MXGP class. But I did hear there were talks of him possibly staying over a little bit longer, a little bit more than just this summer. So hopefully that is the case, and hopefully Mikel Harrop's pro motocross career did not end with a broken collarbone in Unadilla on Moto One here this last weekend. Mix those two up. Meant to say broken collarbone in Moto One at Unadilla. But we are here now. So now back to the racing, actually. We had Tom Vial, like I mentioned, get a very good start once again. And also once again, we had Joe Shimoda struggled a little bit off the gate. He came out in 5th, Deegan down in 12th. And another guy I want to put a little bit of a spotlight on here is Julian Beaumaire. I mentioned the contacts, is riding a little bit better. He was very, very solid this weekend at Unadilla, especially his starts. Moto 2, he was 2nd across the line. Moto 1, he was 3rd across the line. He finished 6th in Moto 1. Ended up getting a 4th place here in Moto number 2. So very, very solid day here for Julian Beaumaire. I talked about him a little bit earlier. So that is Juju Beaumaire here at Unadilla. And once again, Joe Shimoda, I talked about it being very aggressive. In the first couple laps of Moto number 1, he came out and was second place early. Like I mentioned, he was fifth place going across the line. And so he was very, very aggressive once again early in moto number two. He was able to get to the lead past Tom Vielle. Vielle, it looked like he made a little bit of a mistake going on and going inside there. Vielle looked like he just really got stuck on that inside rut, and Shimoda was just able to rip around the outside, jump down the hill, and then was able to control the inside going into the next corner and wasn't able to do the same thing he did in Moto 1. He wasn't able to just go out there and drop everybody. So Moto 2 here was a lot closer, which not really sure he really cares that it was closer, because he did get a little help here in Moto 2 by having, spoiler, he had Tom Vielle split him and Deegan in the results here for Moto 2. Had a little bit of a, I'm having it again, brain fart. There's the word we're looking for. But one thing with Hayden Deegan here in Moto number 2, Jet Lawrence, we all know him jumping the gate in Moto number 1 at Ironman and getting penalized a whole lap, and then coming out and saying there's guys going off the track, cutting the course, this, that, they're not getting in trouble. I did notice Hayden Deegan did go off the track two times on one lap. So I think he was really, really pushing to try and get to Shimoda, to just, if he got to Shimoda here in Moto number 2 and beat him in Moto number 2, then that would have meant championship was his around early. And so I think beginning of the moto, that was his plan. And then going off the track twice, seemed like he made a couple of, I guess you can call them, uncharacteristic mistakes, especially from what we've seen from Deegan this year. He hasn't really made the big mistake like he did last year at, I believe it was Hangtown, when he went cartwheeling through the air. Red Bud last year, he had a big get off, but that was also because he hit a rider that crashed on the backside of a tabletop, hit him on landing. Really, the only thing you can say Hayden Deegan did this year was at Red Bud, when he crashed in qualifying and then crashed 3-4 times during the races as well. But I just noticed that he did go off the track a couple times, and I do not believe there were any penalties that were handed out. Go to the news. Yeah, it doesn't look like there were any penalties that were handed out here for Hayden Deegan in Moto number 2. Because if there were, then that could obviously change up the championship look going into the last round. But like I mentioned, there were not. So now back to the racing, where I started looking at time left and gap, which seems like the last couple weeks, especially in the 250 class, that's really all there's been to do. Shimoda, 10 minutes in, had about 2.5 second gap over Tom Vielle. And then halfway, he had just over a 4 second gap. And so, like I mentioned, he wasn't able to really put the hammer down in Moto 2 like he did in Moto 1. But once again, he was the strongest in Moto 2, running the fastest lap time with a 221.002. Next fastest was Tom Vielle, who ended up finishing second place with a 221.827. So Joe Shimoda, like I mentioned, nothing really happened here in Moto 2 after he got to the lead. Just kept it very consistent, was able to end up winning by just over 12 seconds over Tom Vielle in 23.8 seconds over Hayden Deegan. So Shimoda able to go 1-1 for his, what is it, third overall? Yes, a third overall of this season. Two out of the last three. Four out of, or not four. How can he win four out of the last whatevers if he's only won three? Three out of the last five he has won. He went Redbud 1, Spring Creek 3, Washougal 1, Iron Man 2, and then back at Unadilla where he went 1-1 for first overall. Deegan with scores of 2-3 finished second overall, and Vielle back-to-back on the podium since coming back from injury, 4-2 for third place overall. Julien Baumaire, 6-4 for fifth. So, like I mentioned, just a whole lot better here this week for Julien. Just shy of his season best this year. His season best is a fourth at Hangtown. He's got three top fives now. He's got two fives and a four. So really hoping to see maybe Juju get a little bit more momentum going into the SMX playoffs, where obviously he was in that Supercross championship for a good portion of the year. So hopefully he can find a little bit comfort going to a semi-Supercross track. I think he's going to excel in St. Louis, but there's also a lot of other guys that I think could excel in St. Louis. One of them being Cole Davies, went 23-23 for 26th overall. Like I mentioned, a little bit of a letdown, I think, for Cole Davies. There was a lot of people out there who was thinking he could finish around 10th overall, and he just didn't quite have it. But the other guy who made his debut here, Cole Davies might be the other guy who made his debut here. Caden Dunley went 7-13 for 11 overall. So really excited to see. Didn't know too much about him going into the weekend, but really excited to see how he can do here coming up next year. Obviously, 11th in your pro debut, not too shabby. That's a pretty solid pro debut if you ask me. But now looking into the points, like I mentioned, Hayden Deegan came in with a 51-point lead over Joe Shimoda. Shimoda is the only guy who is still mathematically in reach. That gap is now down to 43. So Hayden Deegan now only needs to finish 15th in a moto next weekend, and he will wrap up the championship. Maybe it's 15th. I don't know. Not solid at math. But Hayden Deegan has a very achievable goal, I should say. Basically, as long as he can finish the motos, he should be able to wrap up this 250 championship for his second year in a row, for his second championship in pro motocross. He does have the SMX World Championship number one seed wrapped up. He did that a couple weeks ago. So now all the focus for Deegan is just not doing anything stupid, really, and hoping that he doesn't have a bike failure or it doesn't just absolutely pour rain and screw something up for him. So I think pretty obvious Hayden Deegan is going to go in there and win his second championship. But like I mentioned at the start of the show, I did correctly pick Joe Shimoda to go out there and win this overall and push the championship celebrations to Buds Creek. Now, to be honest, he can go out there, win Buds Creek, and it can mean essentially nothing for him, which obviously does suck, but that is racing and that is the championship. We basically already got our top three in championship figured out here with Deegan, Shimoda second, and Garrett Marchbanks third. Them three are pretty locked in. The only championship battle really you could still have here amongst the top fellas is Levi Kitchen in fourth and Tom Vielle in fifth. They're separated by 7 points. So with Levi Kitchen, like I just mentioned, in fourth, there's a chance Tom Vielle, if he keeps riding how he is, and if Levi Kitchen keeps riding how he is, who he went 10-10 for 10th overall at Unadilla, there's a very solid chance that Tom Vielle can go out there and get fourth place in his last 250 motocross championship in America and all over the world, because like I mentioned, he is essentially gone. So now that we are here, I might as well talk about it. Tom Vielle was asked about if his plans next year are set amidst the rumors of the 450 deal with HRC in the MXGP series. And he said, everything is set in stone, but obviously, his exact words were, everything is set in stone, but obviously I can't talk about it, which basically says, I'm out after this year. And I know there's some other people out there who have written it and reported it that he is gone after Vegas this year. And I don't even know if he is on the French Motocross Nations team, because I have not seen any reports of that. So we are going to take a look, because I feel like I definitely would have seen that. France Unveil. That is an old article because it says Mouskan is racing MX2 and Ferrandis is in the open. I don't see anything based on who will be there for Team France. It looks like Team France has not yet announced their teams. What do we got here? We got an ad. Of course we do. And we got another giant ad. What year is this? Yeah, this is also a very old one because it has Mouskan again on the GP class. Okay, awesome. So I can't find anything for Team France for the Motocross Nations in this little... Okay. 2025 French Motocross Nations team is likely to consist of Romain Fèvre, Tom Vielle, and Maxime Renault. It's the same team that won back in 2023. So, yeah, it will be very interesting to see if Tom Vielle does go out and get that phone call for Team France with how he's struggled a little bit here the last couple, or this season. But like I said, he's turned it around the last couple weeks. One of them being at Ironman, where the event is held. And also, I'm not very plugged into the motocross or MXGP series, so I don't know if they have really any better options for a 250 class. That will be very interesting to see if Tom Vielle is on that French team. Obviously, he is very, very familiar with the Ironman track that the race is being held on. So hopefully Vial gets the call, but hopefully he does not do very good and Team USA can go ahead and get the win. I do believe that will wrap us up here for the 250s, though. And now if for Team Honda, it's time to start popping champagne because we are on to the 450 class here. And like I mentioned, we had two chances at championship celebrations. We didn't get one in the 250s, but we did get one in the 450s. So let's jump into the 450 class now. I almost forgot big takeaways for the 250s. There is only one in my mind, especially with this championship coming down to an end and the way the races went. The biggest one, it seemed like Hayden Deegan not pushing it too hard is my biggest takeaway here for the 250s. I mentioned it, how it seemed like he's gotten smarter this year, not making so many little mistakes that lead to big mistakes. And it just seems like, especially here at Unadilla, he really, really cleaned it up. First moto, said he went for it, couldn't do it, hung back. Second moto, didn't have a shot at Joe Shimoda again. And so the big, like I said, the big takeaway is just the fact that Hayden Deegan was a lot smarter in Unadilla than he would have been maybe 2 years ago. Last year, I know he wrapped it up around early, I do believe. And especially 2 years ago, it seemed like he probably maybe would have tried to send it and do something stupid. But he didn't do that this year at Unadilla and knows he's got another basically free weekend here to go wrap it up at Bud's Creek with. Yes, there's pressure on him, but let's be honest, there's not a lot of pressure on him. So now we can make our ways over here to the 450s. And we had Ken Roczen making his motocross debut for this summer. He always comes out, does one or two rounds. Last year he came out and did a 250 race at, I do believe it was Bud's Creek, I think. Oh no, he did Ironman. I thought he did Bud's Creek. He did Unadilla last year as well. So he did one on a 450, one on a 250. So Kenny Roczen always coming out and making at least typically one start here in the outdoors since the SMX playoffs have started. Wants to make sure he gets some points. And this year, coming off of injury, his first race since Pittsburgh, he did say going into this weekend, or this last weekend, that he hasn't put his foot down very much while at home. Was a little nervous on how it was going to go, but he did make a post after the race saying his ankle felt good and he needed it, basically saying he needed to kind of just go out there and essentially just stress test it, basically make sure it's all good, because I mean you can do some laps at home, but nothing equals to an actual race and actual gate drops. So it's a good thing we had old Ken Roczen out there doing that. So now getting to the rest of the 450 class here in qualifying, we had a familiar face, Jett Lawrence, at the top of the board here, as over a second and a half faster than at least the rest of the field. The only guy in the 211s. He went 211.757. Next closest, Justin Cooper, second place, who we've started to see him come on strong in qualifying. Obviously, he did have that big crash back at Millville, and so that kind of hurt him a little bit. And now it seems like he's kind of been struggling since then, even after the break. But he qualified second here with a 213.443, only guy in the 213s. And then you got to go all the way to 215.438, and that's Eli Tomac in third place. So like I said, Justin Cooper being 1.6 seconds behind Jett Lawrence, and then Eli Tomac being 2 seconds behind Justin Cooper just shows mainly the fact that Jet Lawrence came out. He was mad about how the last race turned out, I believe, and he just did not appreciate the penalty that, to be honest, I think he might have deserved. He deserved a penalty, didn't deserve as big of a penalty as he got, but we covered all that in the Iron Man recap. I mentioned Ken Roczen being back. He qualified fourth. Jorge Prado. Boy, oh boy, do we got a lot of Jorge Prado. He qualified fifth, and that was the highlight of his day besides a hole shot that he grabbed. Qualified in fifth place. One interesting thing, Hunter Lawrence was qualified in seventh place, 4.7 seconds behind Jet Lawrence. A lot of the times you'll see them 1 and 2 or 1 and 3. They're usually pretty close together, but Hunter Lawrence was, he just didn't have the qualifying speed. He did have the race speed though, just not the qualifying speed that was needed. So now jumping here into moto number one. And this is where it all starts. Jorge Prado goes out there, grabs a hole shot. Hunter Lawrence was in second. Jet was back in seventh place. Ken Roczen coming back, fourth place off the line. Pretty solid for him for his first gate drop back. We saw Sexton come back at Red Bud and struggle with his starts there. Ken Roczen didn't seem to have that problem. He had a couple good starts. Well, he had one good start, I guess. Second moto wasn't as good. He was 13th in the second moto. But he had a good start here in the first moto. The one guy I want to pay attention to is Jorge Prado. Like I said, we got a lot of Prado here. He started in first. Very quickly started dropping back. Getting passed by some of the top guys. RJ Hampshire came up. And I'm pretty sure Hampshire might have surprised him because he got to the lead very quickly. Also, one thing to note, he grabbed the hole shot. Jorge Prado, this is. He grabbed the hole shot. He was the only guy, I believe, using the knobby tire, and he was able to grab the hole shot with said knobby tire. And a lot of times the scoop tire is basically your hole shot tire at this point because it's not as good around the rest of the track a lot of the times. And, well, in California, not as good around the rest of the track. From what we heard here at Unadilla, the track being very rocky and technical and difficult, scoop tire might have been pretty bad around the rest of the track as well. But, like I said, 1.5 laps in, Jorge Prado went from first all the way back to sixth. That is just absolutely insane. He came out, said he liked the bike after Ironman. He had a pretty solid Ironman for his standards for this year, at least. His career standards Ironman wasn't good because he said he judges it's either win or lose. If he's winning, he's living up to his expectations, I should say. And if he's losing, even if it's second place, he's not happy about it. Which, I mean, that's a competitor for you. But competitors also don't quit. And that is what Jorge Prado seemed like he did here. He went first to sixth in 1.5 laps. And then by the end of the race, he finished in 15th place. Now, I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit. I missed it. But he was very, very far back in 15th place. He got beat by Mitchell Harrison, Michigan guy. Gotta love it, for us at least. It's just, inexcusable, I think. It seems like he has just quit. If he goes from first to sixth in a lap and a half, I think he just straight up gave up. I think he might have given up on Kawasaki already. There's talks of him going to KTM on a strictly bonus-only deal. There's just no way I see this relationship with him and Kawasaki working any longer past this year. I thought I saw he signed for 3 years, so that is going to be very, very interesting to see how that all gets worked out, because like I said, everything I've seen is he's going to KTM next year and he's somehow getting out of his Kawasaki contract, which I'm sure he wants. And honestly, at this point, I'm sure Kawasaki doesn't mind it either, especially with them getting Chase Sexton next year, which that could be a whole nother can of worms with Sexton coming. We saw how it happened. We saw what happened last time he switched bikes or switched manufacturers in an off season. He struggled big time in Supercross, but he won the Motocross Championship. Really, I think that might have gotten it all out for my Jorge Prado rant here. So now I think we can get back to the rest of the racing, where we had RJ Hampshire going out, leading a couple laps. He became the ninth person to lead a lap here in 450 Motocross this year. And we had Hunter Lawrence in second, Jet Lawrence in third place. And then I believe we had Eli Tomac in fourth at this point. Now we are looking for some of this. Okay, here we go. Old Jetson coming up on his big brother. He just straight up ripped the outside, and then they put him in control for the inside in the next corner, and that's where he was able to make the pass. They were right on the heels of RJ Hampshire when that happened. And then the pass on RJ Hampshire might have been one of the most insane things ever. RJ Hampshire even posted a picture of it on his Instagram story and said, "I have no idea where he came from," because they were going up a hill where James Stewart broke it down pretty good, I think, on the broadcast, where he said that they're going uphill and turning right, and he said it's a little off camber, so if you're on the left side, it really wants to take you left, even though you have to turn right. It wants to basically take you off the track. And Jet Lawrence, basically with no room to spare on the left side of the track, is able to just somehow make his way around RJ Hampshire. And then it was basically on for Jet Lawrence at that point to try and run away with this thing. And that's kind of sort of what he was able to do. From RJ Hampshire at the bottom, I do believe it was the bottom of the wall jump that used to be, I guess they used to call it Screw You. I don't exactly remember it. RJ was battling in second place with Hunter Lawrence, gets to the bottom, and it's kind of hard to see because Jet's roost is going through when RJ crashes, but it looked like RJ might have just kind of pushed the front end a little bit, tips it over while he was in second place. Hunter Lawrence and Eli Tomac were able to get by, so that puts RJ down in fourth place, where he did end up finishing. And then I noticed from about 7 to 5 minutes left, RJ Hampshire, or not RJ, we're talking about him so much, he got stuck in my head. Jet Lawrence was able to pull a 3-second gap on Hunter Lawrence, and so that basically broke Hunter for this race. Got Jet, what he needed 3 points. That got Jet his 50-point lead that he needed going into Bud's Creek this upcoming weekend. So he was all set there, basically. All signed and sealed. It just wasn't delivered yet. He was all set after Moto 1. Eli Tomac did have a little bit of a flurry. Pushed a little bit on Hunter Lawrence late. Thought maybe we would get a little battle there. But that did not end up happening. Jet ends up winning by 7 seconds. And like I said, Eli made a little push late. Didn't do it. Made a couple mistakes. And then ended up finishing 14 seconds behind Hunter Lawrence and 21 behind Jet. So we had Jet getting the Moto 1 win and the 3 points he needed coming into the weekend. Hunter Lawrence in second place, Eli Tomac in third, RJ fourth, and like I mentioned, Ken Roczen making his return to pro motocross, finishing in fifth place, which then he had a little bit of a troublesome second moto where he wasn't able to finish. We will get into that later, obviously. Justin Cooper sixth, and Ferrandis in seventh place. And I mentioned Jorge Prado all the way down there in 15th. He has been, if I'm handing out awards, I'm handing out a biggest disappointment award. And we don't even need to finish the season. I don't even think we needed to get to the break in motocross, and it would have been Jorge Prado's for sure. He's been definitely the biggest disappointment. Yeah, you can probably throw Chase Sexton in there. The defending champion goes out twice this year with injury. So obviously that was a disappointment. But Jorge Prado making all the rounds and just, he's making them physically. Mentally, it doesn't seem like Jorge Prado has been at every single race. There's been a couple where it's like, all right, there's Jorge Prado. I know James Stewart called it, who's calling him George Prado for a little bit because it wasn't Jorge, and then he was Jorge. Oh, we got George back. And that is just not something really that we want to see. So heading into moto number two now, all Jet needed to do, which I say all Jet needed to do, it's a big tall task. He needed to just beat Hunter Lawrence and he would wrap up the championship. And for just about anybody else, I probably wouldn't say, oh, all they have to do is beat this guy who's second place in points. Obviously, second place in points is the guy he's going against. But with Jet Lawrence, it's easy. It's easy work for him, basically. We had, starting Moto 2, across the whole shot line, we had Hunter Lawrence in first, Justin Cooper second, and Jet Lawrence, much better start here in Moto 2, in third. And by time they hit the very next corner, Jet Lawrence was already in first place. I'm not sure if we got a good look at it. So, okay, not the next corner. Hunter Lawrence and Justin Cooper go inside slash middle of that next corner. Jet, like he was doing all day, hits the outside and gets himself the lead. Hunter Lawrence, though, in the early laps, he was not letting Jet kind of get away with it. He did not want to make it easy on Jet. Of course, they don't post it. But there is a couple points where it definitely looked like it might get a little physical between the brothers for the first time. I know they got asked about it in the press conference. They said they never hit each other. or like never made contact on the track, and it came very close a couple times, especially at that bottom of the wall where, like I said, they go down a steep hill, make flip a quick 180 and come right back up the steepest hill on the track. It seems like Hunter Lawrence said he did not want to let Jet win this championship this past weekend. He did everything he could. It was about 10 minutes in. It seemed like Jet was just absolutely unbreakable. He survived Hunter's early shots, and then he had a 4.8 second lead. And that basically was it, because the only other note I have, and it was honestly kind of a little bit like 250 Moto number two. Once, about 10 minutes in, once everyone got settled, nothing really happened except for Justin Cooper, who was in third place, gets passed by Eli Tomac going up that same hill I talked about, with Jet Lawrence being on the outside of, or being on the left side of RJ Hampshire. Justin Cooper was around in the middle, that same spot where Hampshire was, and this time Eli Tomac went up the inside and was able to go inside on the next two corners and made that pass. So once again, we had Jet Lawrence in first, Hunter Lawrence in second, and Eli Tomac in third. Jet goes out, ends up winning by 10 seconds, wins his second 450 championship, Pro Motocross championship, his fifth 450 championship overall, because he's got the one Supercross, he's got the two SMX World Championships, and now the two Pro Motocross Championships. So Jet, in three-ish seasons on a 450, he has five championships, which is just absolutely insane. The run that he has gone on here since entering the 450 class. He comes in year one, rookie season, is full-time debut on a 450, outdoors, 2023, goes out there and just says, screw it, I'm going undefeated, goes undefeated, goes to Supercross, or the SMX Championship, wins that in the 450s, and since he was so good in the 250s in Supercross that year, he even got a bonus for his finish in the SMX Championship in 250s when he didn't even race it. So Jet is just an absolute freak. He's an alien. He's a once-in-a-generation type rider, it seems like. They had McGrath, which I was too young for. Ricky Carmichael, which I was basically too young for. James Stewart was in there a little bit, but I mean, at this point, Jet Lawrence is better than James Stewart in my mind already. He's got more outdoor championships already. He's got two. James only had one. There's just so much to say, but like I don't know how to say it to try and describe how good Jet Lawrence is. Obviously, that's not very good for a podcast because there's so much to say. I don't know how to say it. So I think we're just going to move along here. And if any point in this podcast where something else will pop into my noggin, then I will bring it up. So overall, we had Jet going 1-1, like I said, with the championship as well. Overall, was made very, very easy. It's nice when the guys do this for us. Hunter Lawrence going 2-2 for second, and Eli Tomac going 3-3 for third. Now, I mentioned Ken Roczen earlier finished 13th overall, and he had a moto score of 38, and he was still only one position behind Jorge Prado in the overall. Biggest disappointment award, like I said, Jorge Prado, you, congratulations, you have won that for this year. But Ken Roczen, he said towards the end of Moto2 it was getting difficult for him to breathe. I think he even mentioned like a sharp stabbing type of pain in the chest. Where are we? Second moto. This is from Ken Roczen's Instagram. I had about 15 minutes in me. I was pretty gassed at that point. The intensity racing is always awesome at another level than at home. The track was hard pack. Here we go. And it all kind of beat me to shit, were his exact words. I was cramping so bad in my obliques and under my rib cage, I literally couldn't inhale anymore, and it was like a knife in there. He said he's never had that to that extent. He also went on to say, I obviously wanted to finish the race. I only had 3 laps to go, but I was in such strange pain and not being able to inhale, I ended up going back to the rig and called it a day. Obviously, not exactly how the day wanted it to go for Ken Roczen, but like I said, he got a 5th place in Moto One. Maybe just needs to work on fitness a little bit, and he should be back to the solid Ken Roczen we all know. We know going into the SMX playoffs, he's definitely a contender with 2 20-minute motos. He just said in Moto number 2, he only had 15 minutes left. You take away 10 minutes from Moto number 1, boom. Now he's got enough energy for Moto number 2. And he was riding. He was in a pretty solid spot, too, when he pulled off. Obviously, he was not up top 5 like he was in Moto number 1. But he was in a good spot in Moto number 2, especially considering it was his first motocross race of the year. One other thing to note is RJ Hampshire. When he went down in Moto number 2 here, it was the first time really I can think of Hampshire going down so far this motocross season. And in my preview, I even said RJ is going to do RJ things. I think I even put a question mark down next to it. And by saying that, I meant like riding on the edge, ragged. There's a chance he's just going to absolutely send himself flying off the bike. But it seems like now that he's on this 450, he's able to be a little bit more controlled and doesn't have to just go full throttle, twist the grip off that thing, and let it eat like the 250. And I am very, very happy for RJ Hampshire because he seems like he is just so much more controlled and I don't want to say content on the 450, but so much he looks like he's in so much more control and he's able to ride to what is the best of his abilities. I think the best way I can put it there is he now seems like he's riding to the best of his abilities, especially coming on late. He had that overall podium at Ironman with the 2nd place there. Red Bud Moto 1, he got a 3rd place for his first moto podium. So I just think this 450 has helped out RJ Hampshire a lot more than definitely I was expecting. So now I think it's about big takeaway time here for the 450s. And the biggest one, basically, go back a couple minutes and listen to what I had to say about Jet Lawrence, because he is an absolute alien, like I mentioned, and winning 5 championships in basically 3 years on a 450 is just absolutely wild. Once-in-a-generation guy. That's all I can say about it, is he's absolutely a once-in-a-generation type of talent. It's going to be very exciting to get Chase Sexton back for the SMX playoffs, though. And hopefully he can, I said it last week, hopefully he can make it through all three rounds, especially the second moto of the third round in Vegas, because that's been the one that has given him trouble. I don't know if I want to say trouble or struggled. He's crashed out the first 2 years of this in the last moto. Hopefully that doesn't happen for his sake, because we saw how his final race on HRC Honda went. It went with him crashing and him walking off without the bike. Don't want to see his, well, I guess it ideally wouldn't be his final race as a KTM guy either, of him crashing at round three in the second moto and walking off without the bike, because ideally he goes to Motocross of Nations at Ironman and wins it for the good old US of A. But we just got very sidetracked there talking about Chase Sexton, when the big takeaway was Jet Lawrence is an animal. Second one was the track. A lot of the riders, 250s and 450s, were kind of sort of complaining about how the water, they put too much water down before the motos. They think maybe they should have watered it earlier in the day, so it kind of had a little bit of time to soak up. Jet said it perfectly in the press conference, where there's so much water in the middle, it felt like you were stuck to the edges, basically, of like the, that was really the only racing line until a little bit later in motos, where you could start getting to the middle a little bit. I guess they were expecting rain, I think, either Friday afternoon or Friday night. And so I think that was a problem. They were expecting rain to kind of help them water the track, and I guess the rain never came. And also, I do believe it was RJ Hampshire and I think Hunter Lawrence both mentioned coming up the wall jump, or up the wall, after turning down there at Screw You. They said the sun and the dust made it absolutely impossible to see. So, yeah, they were fighting the conditions a little bit at Unadilla, that's for sure. I think that'll just about do it here for us for this Unadilla recap. We will be now setting our sights on Bud's Creek. I would talk about the points in the 450s, but Jet Lawrence already won the championship. Justin Cooper has the number one seed for the SMX World Championship locked up. So points-wise, we got nothing to go for. Now we just got straight up racing. Well, championship-wise, I should say. Points-wise, Eli Tomac and Justin Cooper are in a little bit of a fight here for third place. Eli Tomac was able to get third place in the championship back after this weekend. So that's really our only top championship battle, I guess I should say. So now predictions for Bud's Creek. I think 250, Deegan is going to go in with the same attitude Jet had this last weekend. I think he's going to go in there, go 1-1, get the overall, and get the championship. And I think in the 450s, we might see, I wouldn't be too surprised if we see Hunter Lawrence go out there, get another overall. But one thing I would like to talk into existence would be Eli Tomac going out there and getting an overall this year, just because that would be nice, and why not? He's got a handful of second places, and he's got a moto win on that shortened race at, where was that? Is that High Point? Yeah, High Point, where he got that with the lightning. So we're gonna manifest Eli Tomac getting a win at Bud's Creek this next weekend. That will wrap us up here for a Unadilla recap. @talkin_moto on X. Very excited to watch the races. Once again, we'll be watching them on Sunday, like I have basically all year long. And also, I just remembered I won't be able to watch any of the SMX playoffs live. So those will all be watched on Sunday. So that also is a little bit of a bummer. But @talkin_moto on X. Like I always say, go give it a follow, like, tweet, retweet, comment, all that fun stuff. And we will be back next week, most likely talking Hayden Deegan being a back-to-back champion in the 250 class. So that will be exciting. And if he's not the champion at the end of next Saturday, then we will have even more to talk about. So that will be exciting also. See ya.